Hi, everybody, and welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm Robert Green, and to kick off what's going to be a great 2012 for the show, I have a guest, the esteemed Brian Keller, my colleague and good friend.
Thanks for having me, Robert. I'm a huge Toolbox fan. I've watched almost every episode. I learn something new every single time. So thanks for finally inviting me onto the show. This is great.
I wanted to wait to see if the show was a success.
Yeah, definitely.
I didn't want to have you on early and then have the show tank and be canceled.
No, it's great. And I think you're approaching a million views for the show so far.
So far as of this morning, so end of year, about 850,000 views.
Wow, that's better than most shows on Fox, I think.
So thank you, everybody, for watching and making the show a success. I think this is going to be a good year. We've got a couple Entity Framework episodes coming up soon, and then Visual Studio 11 beta soon after that,
right,
along with Windows 8. So we'll have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, and you'll definitely be back, hopefully, to talk about some of the new testing features.
That's right. That's right.
But what we're going to do today is do some Visual Studio 2010, and you're going to show us manual testing.
That's right, and a lot of people, I find, still aren't aware that that manual testing is a feature that we shipped as, or it's a set of features and capabilities that we shipped as part of the Visual Studio 2010 wave of products and features there. So I'd love to show you those.
So just to set context, developers would do unit testing. They test their own code in discrete chunks on their own machine. When everything runs, they create the executable and then sort of toss it over the wall to the testers.
Right. So developers may do unit testing, performance testing. Profiling is sometimes considered part of that. Coded UI tests are a way for you to automate paths through the application. Mm-hmm. But what we find is that regardless of the size of the organization, the majority, somewhere around 70% of the testing effort that takes place is still manual testing. So it's someone that sits down on a daily basis and tries to use the software just like a user would, mm-hmm. and then they surface all kinds of bugs in the process. So that's also referred to as black box testing, okay. where you don't necessarily know what's going on with the code under the covers. You just know what the software is supposed to do and what it's not supposed to do, and then you test to try to break it.
And so in a inefficient world, somebody would sit down, use the software, and then send you an email or write notes in a Word document or something and says, app's busted, I clicked the button.
Right.
And I didn't get, when I got some silly message.
That's right.
And then you say, well, what were you doing? Well, I clicked the button.
Right, exactly. Right? Yeah, that's unfortunately the state of the art for a lot of testing organizations today, is you're lucky as a developer, you're lucky to get kind of a one-line text box description. Maybe you get a screenshot of what was happening. And this causes a lot of angst and inefficiency between programmers and testers. Right. And so another part of what I'll show you today is, in addition to providing manual testers with a great set of tools for actually tracking and organizing and running their tests, we also wanted to bridge that gap between testers and programmers so that when I find a bug, and I know your code never has any bugs, Robert, but hypothetically, if I found a bug in your code and I sent that to you, it already has, you know, maybe it's a screenshot, maybe it's a video recording, maybe it's information about the system I was running on. Mm-hmm. What build was I using, you know? Because maybe you look at that and say, well, it works on my machine, but the reality is that we're using different builds. And so anything we can do to try to give you as the programmer information that you can use to quickly diagnose and fix the issue, as opposed to having this ping pong back and forth between the tester and the developer,
right.
That's a win for everyone.
And I think it gets even increasingly harder as, you know, especially with framework features, where it used to be you shipped a version of the framework in the box,
mm-hmm.
and then the next version of the framework came the next time the box shipped.
Right.
We're kind of moving away from that, right? The Entity Framework guys are shipping the core Entity Framework with the .NET framework, but then they have a bunch of additional releases.
Sure.
You know, how many times is Silverlight revved?
Yep.
What version of Silverlight do you have in your machine?
Yeah.
It could be an RC. Is it 4? Is it the 4 RC? Is it, you know, a 5
what,
beta
What language
RC?
Machine? Is it left to right or right to left for your text reader?
Right.
I mean, the test matrices are just enormous, and they've kind of scaled beyond to what our simple, like, you know, Word and Excel solutions for tracking our test cases can really afford us.
Mm-hmm.
So should we dive into kind of a quick demonstration?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, so what I have here is Visual Studio 2010, And if I show you this application that we're kind of testing with here, this is just your basic web application. It's ASP.NET, MVC, nothing too fancy here. But what I want to show you is Microsoft Test Manager. And so if you have either Visual Studio 2010 Ultimate or Visual Studio 2010 Test Professional installed, then you'll have what's called Microsoft Test Manager, which is a new tool that we built from the ground up. It's actually based in WPF for those folks that are interested. And this is the tool that you as a manual tester would use day in, day out for organizing your test cases, for tracking those test runs, and eventually, again, hypothetically for your code, actually finding bugs. And so what we see here is that across the left-hand side, I have a list of some of the requirements that I'm working on. So these are requirements that the development team is actively implementing. So as an example, as a customer, I should be able to remove items from my chart, right? And so as a tester, I take a look at that requirement, and maybe I read a little bit about it, and then I come up with some test cases which are going to allow me to verify that that requirement is implemented correctly. And so here you can see customer can remove items from shopping cart by clicking the X button. Entering invalid data in the shopping cart causes the shopping cart quantity should not cause it to change. So if I type the letter A, for example, then I don't want that to crash my shopping cart. And so if I open up one of these, you can see all the individual test steps down here, as well as test parameter values.
And who defines these? The tester, the developer, both?
Typically, it's the tester who takes a look at the requirements, and then they go through and they write a series of test cases based on those requirements to model both what an application should be doing and what it should prevent you from doing, so any kind of security holes or something like that. And so in this case, rather than write three different test cases to test three different values, down here you can see I've got, new quantity, A0, -5. I've just parameterized this so that when I get to the quantity, we just have this kind of, Twitter-style syntax to say new quantity. And then what it does is it allows me to run through that test case three different times to make sure that it's actually behaving correctly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at that point, if I go back to my test plan, you'll notice that if I switch over to the test activity tab, it's kind of a Metro style interface here, which I really like. If I switch over to that, you can see all of the test cases that are currently on my plate to run. You'll notice that we only have two requirements over here, whereas over on this other list, we had four different requirements. And the reason that only two are showing up is that this one's actually in planning. So I've indicated that this one's not quite done yet. And then the end-to-end test doesn't actually have anything in it yet. But as you start to populate those test cases, then as a tester, I can come in here and I can see test cases which I may need to run. And so here you can see that the last time I ran this particular test, it failed. And so maybe I want to run this test again now that I have a new build available for me. Now, the other thing you'll notice is that it's actually showing up twice. And this is actually to reflect some of those test configurations we were talking about earlier, where maybe I want to test this on both Windows Server 2008 and Windows 7 and Windows 8 using Firefox, using IE. And so as that test matrix starts to explode, I can actually represent that within my test configurations to say for each one of these test cases, I want to run it multiple times.
And so this also, it gives you a great way of keeping track of all the things you want to do, right? You've got a web app, you want to test it on, a number of configurations, XP, Vista, Windows 7, and then Firefox and IE and et cetera.
Yeah.
And maybe if you can get to it from mobile devices, test it using the iPhone and the Windows phone.
That's right.
And then rather than have to remember, oh, did I test it on this particular configuration, you've just got it in a list, and then you just essentially check them off.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So it's a really rich solution for being able to test everything and track it. And it's multi-tenant as well, meaning that if I had multiple people that were going through and testing this application, you could imagine some of our teams at Microsoft use this with hundreds of testers and tens of thousands of test cases. Mm-hmm. Well, all the data is back-end synchronized with Team Foundation Server. So as you start marking test cases as pass or fail, I can see that update on my side, so I know I don't have to run that. So it's really nice.
So the fact that it's all synced with TFS means that the developer could then monitor to see which tests have run.
Exactly.
The test lead would be able to look and see what's been done, run reports.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's really the richness of the solution once you start having all these people use Team Foundation Server. So I thought maybe what we could do next is I could show you actually running a test.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I switch over to my VM again, and I select one of these tests, I could select multiple tests if I wanted to, but I can click on Run here. And this is going to launch what's called the Microsoft Test Runner. And so one of the things that I can do is I can record what's called an action recording. So an action recording is pretty interesting because as a tester, you can imagine maybe I have like a 20-step test case, and the first three steps that I run are, you know, I need to create a new user, then I need to go add some items to my shopping cart, then I need to go check out, and I go through the five pages of filling out my shipping and my billing information, and then today the test case that I'm actually interested in is, does the CAPTCHA show up and register correctly?
Right.
Well, you can imagine that if those first 18 steps work well and you're really just trying to iterate and make sure that the CAPTCHA works.
Start after those 18 steps have been run.
Absolutely. And so one of the things that we allow you to do is take advantage of what's called fast forward for manual testing. So I can record a path through my application once, and I can say for these first 10 steps, I want to fast forward those, and we actually have some automation playback logic which will quickly go through and get you to the point where you then turn it over to the manual tester, and they do their job, which is to say, let's finish this test case and make sure everything's working correctly.
That kind of assumes that the application hasn't broken anything in those first 18 steps, though, right?
That's true. And as the use case here is that as a manual tester, I say fast forward, and I'm watching the screen as it goes. So if it times out because it can't find a control or some other piece of the application is broken, then you'll get a notification, and you'll watch what's going on there. But most of the time, you know kind of the areas that are under flux, and you can say just play through these first 10 steps or whatever. So if I say, let's go ahead and record a new action recording here, and I say start test, from this point forward, it's actually recording anything that I'm interested in capturing. That can include a video, it could include that IntelliTrace information, system information about the machine that I'm running on. If I want to, I can also capture information in the background. So if I was running a SQL Server database, for example, maybe I want to capture all the event log information to see if there's any security exceptions being thrown. If I'm running an ASP.NET application on another server, I can capture all the IntelliTrace data. And then on my client, where I'm running my web application or my WPF client, I can capture a video recording so that, again, as a developer, you can see exactly what I clicked on. So keep in mind that's all happening in the background, and that's what's going to give us that rich bug information later on. And so if I just take this URL and, maybe I open up a new browser here and we go back to our web page, one thing I can do is I can mark each test step as pass fail as I go.
Okay.
Now, you don't have to do this typically on every run, but the reason that I like doing this here when I'm recording an action recording is this gives me the granularity later on to actually play back those individual test steps and say I want to play back steps 1 through 8 or something like that. Now at this point, I now have this value, this parameter value A in my clipboard. And so I'm just going to paste that over there. It's already put that in my clipboard buffer. And then the next step is to click somewhere on the website and notice that it reverted to 1, which is good. So we're going to pass that step. And then we're going to remove this item from my shopping cart, make sure that's working correctly. And then we'll go ahead and close the browser. So at that point, that particular iteration of the test case passed, but remember I have multiple values I want to test as well. Mm-hmm. And so now I can take advantage of that action recording I just captured. And when I start the test this time, maybe what I want to do is I'm holding shift and I'm actually highlighting all those test steps. I can play, and it's going to automate the playback of those test steps. And it's going to very quickly iterate through that application. I think actually I need to close this guy because it's having a trouble finding that window. Let me just close my browsers again. Do that one more time.
There we go.
And there we go. So now what it's doing is it's opening up the application. It's clicking through very quickly the steps, which I as a manual tester may consider very monotonous. And then now I turn it back over to the manual tester to say, yes, that does look correct. We'll go ahead and pass that step. And then just for fun, we can go ahead and kind of close out the rest of these steps and it'll play those back.
So is it playing back in real time, or is it speeding up?
So that's a really good question. So by default, what we do is we actually play back as fast as we can based on how we can find those controls. And so there's a lot of really advanced logic that goes on behind the scenes to say, hey, are we waiting for some asynchronous operation to complete while we're painting this particular data grid because it's bound to some, you know, database behind the scenes? So most of the time, you don't have to worry about how it's actually performing the operations. It just knows how to play it back. And that's the beauty of this, because as a manual tester, I don't always necessarily have the skill set to be able to drop to code and hand tweak a bunch of settings, because again, I may not be familiar with the underlying technology that's being used for this application. It's all black box. I should just be able to put on my user hat and say, how do I break this application?
So I was just thinking, I mean, from the manual tester standpoint, the sooner it gets to the part where there's something for you to do, the better.
Right.
From the developer or usability person's standpoint, I was wondering if you could then watch this video to get an idea of how people are using the application.
You could, actually, and that's a really good use case that we found people doing, because
even if it's at sped up speed.
Yeah, you could. You certainly could. Okay. I mean, obviously, if you want to see how people are using it in regular time, then you would want to have someone run through the manual test without actually fast forwarding.
Right.
But an interesting thing we found that people like doing with these videos is that even if the test case passes, they sometimes like to use those videos as part of their sprint reviews because that's instant documentation that you can say, hey, let's take a look at how this particular feature is working or not working, and then they can go back and see what they accomplished for that given iteration.
Yep.
So it's another thing that you can configure as part of this is even for past video test cases, do you want to save those video recordings in TFS?
Right.
And there's a power tool that you can use to clean those up. A lot of people wonder how much space does that take up in TFS and that sort of thing. But all those bells and whistles are there for you.
Cool.
Yeah. So at this point, if I was to then return to, say, Visual Studio and take a look at a bug that may have been generated here, then I'll show you just very quickly what those bugs look like, because again, it's
switch back up.
Yeah, sure, we can show people what we're doing as opposed to just talk about it, go figure. But while Visual Studio is loading here, once it connects to TFS, I should point out that this virtual machine is something that you can download off of. It's all linked off my blog. We'll get it in your show notes so that if people want to go back and kind of play with this later on after the show, they can do that. And so if I take a look at a bug, here's a bug which was generated by using Microsoft Test Manager. So again, in the past, I would have been kind of lucky to get this one-line description from the tester saying, hey, this is what happened. But now if I use Microsoft Test Manager to generate those bugs, I automatically see the test case that's embedded in here. I know which individual step passed or failed. I could jump to a video recording. And not only that, it actually takes me to the point in the video where the tester reported the failure. You can see that the tester filed a screenshot as part of that. So I could open up that screenshot. I can see which configuration they were running on. Just all sorts of rich information. There's an IntelliTrace file I could open up to see what's going on. I can go to the system information tab and I can see, you know, here's the machine name they were running on, what service pack level. I can see which build number they were running on. So again, all this really rich information, which is why I think programmers who get bugs from manual testers have a vested interest in making sure that those bugs are as rich as possible, because it really can save you a lot of time. The other thing, which is a feature that I love showing off, is you know, there's a common problem here as a tester, right? You wake up every day and you say, all right, yesterday I ran through 200 test cases and, you know, 190 of them passed, and I know that I filed some bugs from those others that didn't pass. And last night the developers created a new build, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in a continuous integration world, you have new builds coming out multiple times per day. How do you know when it's worth your time to pick up a new build based on what's changed and you know, it's going to take you some time to install it? How do you know when a build is really worth it?
Right.
Today, a lot of testers solve that problem by going around and talking to each developer and saying, hey, what'd you change? Or trying to figure out when a feature was checked in or anything like that.
They talk to other testers.
They talk
to
other testers.
Did you install this build? Is it worth it?
Exactly. Well, because we're based on Team Foundation Server here, and we have a build solution, and we know all the code and the work items that developers are checking in, we can actually get some really interesting data here that can help us answer that question without having to go bug a developer and say, hey, what'd you change? And so if I switch over to Microsoft Test Manager and I go to the Track tab here, and I go to Assign Build, the first thing you'll notice up here at the top is that we have the individual build that's currently in use. So 3.18.3 is what I'm currently using. And I see that there's a new build available, 3.18.4. Well, is this build worth my time? Well, down here at the bottom, you can see that we have some regular expressions which were checked in as part of this build. Well, maybe that's not really worth my time. It looks like some kind of developer task. Doesn't really mean anything to me as the end user or as the tester who's the proxy for the end user. So maybe I skip this build and I go to the next build. If I look at 3.18.5, now you see this is starting to get interesting because in addition to those particular regular expressions, something going on, I could probably make that bigger for you to actually read it. In addition to this work actually happening, you can see that finally we have a user story that's being resolved. So as a customer, I have to enter a strong password. That probably explains what's going on with these regular expressions. And I happen to know that's a user story that I was waiting to be finished before I could start testing it.
Do you know that that was a bug that you filed or it's in an area that you're testing?
I happen to know that that's in an area that I'm testing because if I go back to my plan, you can see that I have this user story number 8, okay, which I'm writing test cases for.
But in that track tab, is there the ability to filter by things that are a result of bugs I filed?
No, you can't filter on this particular on this particular screen. But generally speaking, when you're tied to that given iteration, and you're looking at builds that are filtered to this particular iteration 2, as you can see up here, then you know that the development team is working on things right now which you care about. Right. At least that's usually the way it works, right? And then finally, if I kind of switch to the latest build in here, you'll notice that there's an additional bug that's being fixed. So at this point, I know this build's worth it. It's worth me stopping what I'm doing, switching to this new build, and then starting to test this new user story and validating that this bug is in fact fixed. Mm-hmm. But that only answers half the question, right? That gives me some new things that I can go test which maybe weren't implemented or were broken yesterday. The other question I have to ask, Robert, is of those 190 test cases that were passing yesterday, did we break anything?
Right.
Did these new check-ins actually break anything? And that's another problem that we can help you answer. And by using some technology called test impact analysis, we can actually get a really rich sense for what capabilities were passing yesterday, which some check-ins may have broken. And the way that we do that is we actually associate. So when you run this particular test case, we can say that the last time you ran that test case, we actually touched these three classes. Okay. And on this particular class, we touched these five methods.
Okay.
And then as a developer, I go in and I change this method down here. And what we do then is we say, okay, which test case is dependent on that? And then we can say this test case may need to be rerun. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily failing,
right,
but it's something that we want to check.
And so it's based on the fact that you made changes in it, not based on the type of changes you made.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. And so if I say, all right, we want to pick this build, the next page is going to say, hey, there are some tests that you may want to rerun. They were testing before. There are some changes that happened. And so now what I can say is view recommended tests. And now it comes back and it says, hey, these are test cases which passed last time, which may be failing now. And so what I can do is I can just say reset these to active. Okay. And now as a tester, when I go back to the list of things that I need to do, I can now see that these are test cases which are active. I don't know if they're going to pass or fail, but at least I'm telling my test team these are things that you may want to go figure out.
Right.
Yeah. So that's just a quick look at what some of the manual testing capabilities can do. I can provide you with some links of some full, 90-minute talks I've done on this if people are more interested in digging in. We're doing a lot of work that I'll show you in a future episode around doing exploratory testing, or sometimes called agile testing, where you don't start with a test case per se, but you kind of just put on your tester hat
more
and say,
start playing around.
Exactly. Let me just go break something, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited to show you that in a future episode, but for now, that should give your viewers a good taste of what they may actually already own in Visual Studio 2010 that they can start using right away.
So you had mentioned earlier the coded UI testing, which automates UI testing, and this seems to have some automating of UI. So
that's right.
Presumably the technology under the covers is similar, but what's...
It is.
To be clear, what's the difference?
Yeah, so the fast forward for manual testing is really kind of a partial automation solution, because generally when the application is undergoing a lot of changes, you don't want to invest in a lot of automation, because then a developer goes and they make a change, and or they change the way the UI behaves, and you've got to rewrite that automation. But eventually your UI gets to a point and your functionality gets to a point where it's pretty stable. The test cases are passing on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. As a tester, I'm bored from testing this because it's no longer showing any bugs.
Right.
But as a software development team, we want to know down the road if something we changed regresses some functionality which may have been working previously. That's why we write unit tests, right?
Yep.
And so in order to simulate that full end-to-end user testing, you can also take a manual test case and turn that into a fully automated coded UI test. And so there's two ways to do that. One is you either record a path through the application, and we'll track all of your actions in the background and then spit out a bunch of C# or Visual Basic code, which you can tweak if you need to, which then can help you validate the application.
Okay.
Or you can start with the action recordings that your manual testers have already generated anyway as the starting point for turning those into a coded UI test. So maybe in the future I can come back and show you a little bit more of coded UI test, because there's really a ton of stuff you can do in there,
right,
which we could spend a whole episode on.
Sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. So how does this improve in Visual Studio 11? What's new in manual testing?
Yeah, so there's the exploratory testing that we just mentioned. So the ability to not only start with test cases and requirements and kind of work your way up through the system formally, but also mm-hmm. be able to start with kind of put on my testing hat. That's one way that we're improving. Another thing that we've done a lot of investment in is the lab management solution. So the mm-hmm. ability for you to, you know, check in a piece of code, build that code, deploy it out to one or more virtual environments, and then run all your automated tests, and then be able to run your manual tests too in those different environments. That's an area that is very, very powerful. One of the challenges that a lot of people have with that solution today is that it does take kind of a full-time admin to set that up for your team and get it all working, which, granted, if you compare that to the cost of building and maintaining and rolling your own lab machines, it's still a much better solution. But still, we wanted to make that easier. So we've done a lot of work to make lab management easier for you to set up.
Mm-hmm.
You can even take advantage of physical machines or even VMware environments now to do a lot of that automation for you. So that's another big area of investment for us moving forward. And then at Build, we also demonstrated how you can do manual testing of Windows 8 tablet applications as well. So I can test my Metro-style applications, and I can capture that same set of rich data on a tablet and then send that back to Microsoft Test Manager to file in TFS.
That's a good point. Does this today work with Windows Phone apps?
So that's a good question.
I
mean, I like to say that with our manual testing tools, you can write test cases and organize your test matrices and test a bicycle if you wanted to. Obviously, with a bicycle, you're not going to get the full test automation and playback mm-hmm. capabilities and data capture. So the best experience you're going to get using these testing solutions is on Windows with a web application or a rich WinForms WPF application.
Okay.
Now, certainly, you can write test cases.
Silverlight,
you can write manual test cases in, but unless it's Silverlight 4 or 5, you can't actually play those back and fast forward. So again, some of that depends on the type of test automation. We've got a full automation matrix in the documentation that we can link to as well, which shows you exactly which types of platforms you can work with. But one thing that I've seen people do as well is maybe their application has some Flash in it. Well, we can't do test automation with Flash, but what you can do is you can automate all the way up until the point of starting to test that Flash application. So maybe you're signing into a website, you're clicking through mm-hmm. a particular set of menus to get to that Flash component, and then you hand it over to the manual tester. They do their thing from a manual perspective, and then you can automate the rest of the way after that.
Okay.
So there's a number of different ways you can do
that. Fast forwarding support Windows Phone right now?
No, it doesn't support.
Okay.
It's only full desktop right now, and no emulation support. But that's high on our list.
Okay.
Not for Dev 11, but potentially in some future iteration.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then support for Metro apps running on a full
Tablet. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's something we demonstrated at Build.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
Right on.
This is great.
Hopefully it's a good way to kick off the new year. Thanks for having me.
This is great. We'll definitely have you back. I think we could do sort of regular features on all this.
Sounds great to me.
Stuff.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Because it's kind of popular. People want to know.
Yeah, definitely.
I've heard.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thanks for watching Visual Studio Toolbox. Hope you had a great new year and that your year's off to a good start. And we'll see you next time.